Welcome to the Landscaping Podcast. My name is Joel Barnett and I am your host. And you may have noticed a different intro to this episode, and that was a special request by this week's guest, which is Rob Waddell from Waddell Design. Rob runs a landscape design and construction company based not only in Melbourne, but also in Geelong and Byron Bay. So we talk about what the driving force behind having businesses in different localities was, and also the challenges of doing that. And he's also built 4 show gardens at the Melbourne International Flower and Garden Show. So we talk about what those experiences were like. And also he's got an interesting point about the evolution of what it was like when he did his first one, when he was just by himself, compared to the last one when he's got some employees. And he shares some good experiences that he's had, firstly with working with Jason Hodges and then speaking with Ian Barker and then later on Marty Simpkin. So it was a good example about how getting involved with certain things like garden shows or getting out of your comfort zone and talking to certain people can help you learn from those people who have got a lot more knowledge than you. So then that increases your knowledge. So there's some great points that he made there. And we also talk about an app that he's been developing for landscaping companies and get an update on how that's progressing. And also he talks about looking to start franchising for the business as well. So absolutely love chatting with Rob, and I do every time I talk to him. So hopefully you enjoy this chat with Rob Waddell. Rob, thank you for joining us on the Landscaping Podcast. My first question for you is, how did you start in the industry?
Thanks for having me, Joel. Good to be on the pod. Well, if you go right back to when I was in year 10, I told my careers teacher I wanted to either be a brickie or a lawyer, and I didn't end up getting the marks for a lawyer, so I thought, oh, maybe bricklaying's the path for me. Got a job with a stonemason because I thought that might be similar, but maybe a bit more sort of creative side to it. So I worked with a stonemason for a bit, and then that guy said, oh, you should try landscaping because you can do the stonemasonry and the bricks and the timber and the concrete and, you know, all the things that we know and love. So I took that advice and I didn't really love it at the start. I got an apprenticeship and it was pretty good. It was okay, but didn't fall in love with it. Probably not until actually third year, when I really, you know, probably get some opportunities and become a bit more proficient in starting to learn new trade. And from there, I really started to enjoy it a lot more. And it wasn't long after that that I thought, oh, yeah, this is just unbelievable. Fell in love with it. The diversity in the skills, working outside all the time, and just rewarding. Like you're just creating every day, really. And to me, that was awesome. So I loved doing that, loved landscaping. And then I met Jason Hodges at one of the garden shows. It must have been around 2011, maybe, something like that. And he offered me a job in Sydney. So before I knew it, I was in Sydney working with Hodgie. He just moved into a big sort of farmhouse and it was all dilapidated. Burnt out car in the front, holes in the roof, holes in the floor. And I sort of said to him, mate, because I was in, I grew up in Lilydale and in the Dandenongs, east of Melbourne. And I was like, mate, yeah, keen to come up, but I've got to find a house, you know, organize a car, all this sort of stuff. He's like, no, don't worry about it. Just come up with me. And I've got this house with no one in it. So come up and we'll sort of renovate the house, build the garden. I was like, oh, geez, all right. So it was pretty quick. And I was up there with Hodgie and that was awesome. So half the time, you know, half the week I'd be sort of working in building the garden and the other half would be on Better Homes. So for me, I mean, that's a far cry from, that's a long way from Lilydale, put it that way. So I'm loving it. You know, stars of the small screen and I'm still early 20s. So I'm like, you know, anyone that I see from on TV, I just think I'm just starstruck. So I'm loving it. Working with Hodgie, he was always really generous as well. He had a, mate, it was really, really good. Like he had a Mustang. He on the weekends he'd be like, mate, take it up to Palm Beach, take your girlfriend up there. And like I'm still, as I said, I'm early 20s. I'm thinking this is just fantastic. Like the TV cameras are there and I'm up in Palm Beach the other weekend and I'm working with Hodgie in the garden and I was just loving it. So from that, what I said before, like third year apprentice through to, you know, a couple of years, maybe a year or two with Hodgie, it was a dream. I just thought, this is, you know, I'm off and running here. This is just fantastic. So that was really good. And then by 20, 13. So I moved back to Melbourne late 2012, early 2013. And the last time I was in Melbourne, I was an apprentice. So I didn't have staff, didn't have clients, didn't know suppliers, didn't know anything. So I thought, well, how am I going to, that's why I did the garden show. I was like, I'll do the garden show and just try and, you know, try and launch a career from that. So I didn't have any money, but I had time. So what I would do was, like, you know, you build all that subfloor, you know, first day is timber and subfloor. So in the months prior, I'd go around to all the local building sites and ask if anyone had any leftover yellow tongue or like scrap 9045, and I'd just like chuck it on the ute, take it back to mum and dad's, wrap it all up. day one of the garden show, you know, everyone's got these nice packs of timber coming down the forklift, you know, Langer's there, getting the forklift there. Mine comes down and it's wobbling all over the place. There's timber's hanging out. It's all just scrap stuff. Oh, mate, it was funny. And I had no staff. So I just built that whole thing by myself, like spent a few months in mum and dad's driveway, like building the stone walls. And, you know what it's like. You got to prefab so much. And, I was young, energetic, had time. And that's what I did. So I got bronze in 2013. And I was saying to someone the other day that it's funny that, because I was thinking back to, because I was at the garden show the other day, having a look around. And I was saying to someone that I remember in 2013, looking around and sort of an extension of what I was saying, like falling in love with the trade, working with Hodgie. And then, you know, the extension to that is 2013, I'm looking across the road, there's Mark Browning, there's Ian Barker up the road, you got Scotty Wine next to me, won Best in Show that year with Cube 2, that gun, Unreal. And it was just great. I'm starstruck again. I feel like the first few years has been starstruck. It's fantastic. So I'm getting in there, and dude, I remember looking around and thinking, like, look at all these big companies, look, they've got all these guys on site, and it just looks like so much fun and like a lot of help. They've got all this help, and I'm just by myself. But wouldn't that just be fantastic? So then we did 2015, 2017. By the time I got to 2019, and that was the most staff I had at a garden show at the time, I was thinking, this isn't good at all. This is just really expensive. I'm going to pay all these people now. So it's just funny to look back and, you know, I guess you always think the grass is greener and, you know, everyone's got it better than you. But, yeah, I guess that's how it got started.
Yeah, awesome. So that first company you did your apprenticeship for, what sort of work did they do? Were they doing the whole range of landscaping?
Great question. Yeah, so the first guy, it was a local guy out in Moorabark, and he was actually an ex-apprentice of Semkin. So he was very, like, a lot of things, he knew all his tolerances. He knew how thick the slab should be, how deep the hole should be. He was very much not over-engineered, but knew all that structural detail, which was really, really good. We didn't do, it wasn't like whiz-bang design, you know, fancy stuff. It was sort of line and length from that respect. But the knowledge that, you know, when I look at it now, I go, oh, well, that's Marty Semkin. And then, you know, that goes through to my boss and then that comes through to me. So that was all really, really good. And then my experience with, you know, my eyes sort of didn't get open to the create, you know, the sky's the limit with landscape design, isn't it? And I sort of didn't really learn that for a couple of years later. Yeah, so for me, it was a good balance, like a lot of technical stuff early and then a bit more, you know, the imagination was kicking in a little bit later.
Yeah, I find it interesting wherever you start, that's what you think everything is. Like, you don't see, it might be different now because of Instagram, but when I started, I didn't realize there were all the amazing cool things you could do within landscaping, because the first guy I worked for, he was kind of more soft landscaping and occasionally did a bit of hard.
Yeah.
And then when I saw, other companies, I thought, well, that looks amazing, all the different stuff you can do. So, but I suppose now Instagram, you see everything anyway. But
yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, I wonder how much it's realistic. Like, obviously, Instagram's not always realistic, but I wonder if you're, you know, a first-year apprentice and you're looking at a lot of stuff on Instagram, if you think that that's just the standard that everyone and everything should be at all the time, it might be a bit of a false sense of where people should be learning, I guess, maybe, yeah.
It could be a bit intimidating too, looking at some of the stuff that gets done. Like, I find some stuff intimidating that people do, let alone my first-year apprentice looking at it.
Oh, mate, 100%. I agree.
So had you always had plans to go out on your own, or has it just happened?
Sort of. I don't really know. I sort of just happened. I was definitely, you know, towards the back end, I was confident, probably cocky towards the end of, like, working with Hodgie, because I got a lot of opportunity. Like, Hodgie designed all of that garden, and, like, I built a lot of it, you know, under his work. So I had a lot of opportunity to make the mistakes, which didn't stop, obviously, after that. But, you know, you can make some mistakes, you can try some different things. You know, you've got an employer that will give you a little bit of free rein and opportunity. That's what it was for me. So when I was sort of trying to make the most of those opportunities and really proving to myself that I could do it, that's why in 2013, like, I'd only been in business for less than a year and had nothing in Melbourne, but I just knew, I believed that I could do it, because for the last couple of years, I've been given those opportunities and sort of either been given the belief in myself, I suppose, that I could do these things. So then it was just about, well, how can I show people so they'll give me a job.
And that was one of the big show gardens, was it? Your first one?
Yeah. Oh, mate, probably silly, yeah.
What was that one called?
Outdoor Elegance. So it had like Stackstone Wisto front wall, bluestone capping, bluestone path up the middle with a water feature. Then on the right, it was like a dining setting with some forest pansies. And on the left was like a corner timber bench seat with some umbrellas and a barbecue and some wine barrels and stuff like that. So it's pretty simple. But, well, that was actually my first ever sketchbook that I bought. And on the first page, that's the first design I ever drew. And I just sort of presented that to Mifkus, and they said, yeah, no worries. For some reason, they said, yeah, go for it. Might have been short on that, on the applications that year. But again, it just gave me a bit of confidence that what I thought I could do, I was sort of just getting a few, you know, ticks in the boxes along the way. Obviously, that helps.
And then what did you get much feedback after that? Like, did you get work coming in? I mean, anyone wanting to come work for you?
I put on two apprentices from a labour hire place, and then I went to Europe for 3 months, so I didn't have them anymore. but in terms of the work that you get, you know, that's what everybody asks and wants to know. And again, I was chatting with someone the other day, and I said that, you know, 2013, I'm by myself. So, yeah, if I get two jobs, like, there's my year done. Happy days. And I had nothing before that anyway. So was it a success? Yes, it was. But if I did one now and got two jobs, that's a disaster, obviously. So it really depends what, like, at the time, yeah, it was great. It was worthwhile doing for sure. But these days, I think you have to be very clear on what you want to get out of it. Who's that client that you want? How many of them do you need? What's your return on investment look like? Especially if you've got staff and, you know, the bill just goes up and up and up, you know, when does that return happen? And how long can you sort of, I don't want to say milk it, but how long can you milk it? The thing goes for 4 days, you've got to make sure, I think, that you're getting value long after that 4 days are finished. However you want to do that is, you know, that's the trick, I guess.
Yeah, I just did a post from the garden show we built in 2012. So 12 years later, I'm still milking it. So
you have to. Yeah, you have
to. And that won't stop.
Yeah. Well, that's where there's value. Like, there is value in the show for sure. But if you do it, you know, if you don't go in with your eyes wide open, you can get bit. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those people over the years that had no idea what it was all about. And yeah, it's not a normal project.
No, it's not at all. And I just got lucky being in there. And even like as Ian Barker up the road, I think it was 2013, he was there. And then I think I saw him again in 2015. And he said, he basically took me under his wing, and he sort of came down and said, oh, you know, let's get a coffee sometime. And once again, I'm early 20s. Whatever I was, early 20s. And like, I'm just blown away. Here's Ian Barker going, oh, let's go for a coffee. I'm just like weaking out. And he really helped me. I don't know why. Yeah, I just, I should ask him why he came down to me at that time. But anyway, that really, you know, was a real moment for me where, because, you know, probably by 2015, I was, what, 2 or 3 years into business. So by that stage, you've made mistakes. Some things are going well. Some things have you've been hurt. And at that time, I was hurting a bit. So for Ian to come down, he didn't know. But for him to sort of, you know, reach out and want to help or get to know me, or I don't know what he was, maybe just wanted to drink coffee with someone. I don't know. But it's just really lucky to be in that situation and have him reach out, yeah.
So was that help? Was that like garden show help, or was that business help?
It was more business help. I can't imagine he knew anything about me. I just can't remember 2013 or 2015, because he would have seen me in 2013, and I think he wanted to catch up in 2015. So he must have. It was business help. It was, you know, what are you doing? How are you structuring it? Are you having problems? If so, what are they? And just helped me really structure the design and the construction, just helped me structure the business a bit better instead of being, you know, it sort of helped me go from I'm the guy with the ute and the wheelbarrow that can build you this and that to, all right, well, let's design this properly. Let's get registered and have proper contracts, and then we'll build you something really nice. Yeah.
So when you got back from Europe, how did you go about getting work then and employees?
Well, I thought those 2 apprentices from the labour hire company might come back to me, which they didn't, obviously. So what happened after that? So I would have had, yeah, I had like a little bit of work from the garden show. I think I finished one, then went on holidays, and then came back, and I would have had another one there ready to go. But it was just slow after. I mean, what do? You try and find someone who needs a retaining wall down the side of their driveway or a veggie patch, you know, built up veggie garden or something, and you just chip away for so long. So yeah, through 2013 and 2014, I don't even know what I was doing. I was just doing work. Like I had work. I was busy, and I thought I was making money, as you do. yeah, I just filled up the calendar with small building projects, small landscaping projects. Yeah,
and then how was word of mouth and. What was the 2015 garden show like compared to the previous one?
2015 was no good. So I was back living in Lilydale and I wanted to get some bigger jobs. So I'm thinking Yarra Valley, it's on the doorstep, let's do some of that. So that garden was called Yarra Valley. I grew all the plants in mum and dad's driveway and, you know, all hooked up to irrigation, grapevines up over the shed. That was the one that was like a stone barn, stone bridge in the middle. And then there was like a pergola over the side with like natural tree trunk, posts, grapevine over it. The stonework was all really good. The plants were terrible. But what it did was gave me a real appreciation for the nursery industry. I'm trying to grow these from like buying tubes and potting them up. And then I'm like, oh, how am I going to time this? So there, it was just, I mean, the plants were, I mean, maybe to an untrained eye, it might look okay, but nah, they were terrible. And I was opposite Nathan Burkett, so I don't think anyone would look at my plants anyway. Yeah, so that one wasn't so good, but it was aimed at, I was just trying to get bigger jobs in the Yarra Valley instead of, you know, stuffing around with all these tiny, tiny little things. That didn't really work either, to be honest. Like I probably got a little bit of work from it, but not, you know, I'm thinking in my head, okay, you know, a couple of hundred grand, Yarra Valley, you know, an acreage or something. I didn't get those. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And were you slowly building the business up though during that time?
Yeah, I was. So I think to me that's a lot of the value in the garden show. I just thought at the time that we did the block in there at some point too. Can't remember what year that was, but I remember thinking, all right, well, if I go to a client's house, if I can put something together, a bit of an info pack, if I can say, look, I worked on Better Homes and Gardens, did the garden show, we've done the block, you know, you and I know that, you know, anyone can sort of do that. But hopefully to a client, they might just set you aside from somebody else. So that's what I was trying to do initially. Obviously, then you get addicted to the garden show, so you just keep doing them. And 2019 was the one we did to try and sort of let everyone know that we're in Geelong. We just gone to Geelong. And we were trying to, I mean, that wasn't a Geelong style garden either. So even that didn't really work. I mean, beautiful garden, but it wasn't, you know, you're not putting that in Jan Jack.
Which one was that? Because I can remember your last two. One was the circle work, one and the other one had the big pergola with the pitch.
Yeah, circle work was 2017. And yeah, four seasons with that that pergola was 2019.
Yeah, that was, I can't remember the first two, but that last one was definitely the best one I can think of.
Yeah, it was the best one. Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah. That was an expensive one, Joel.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, that was silver medal, that one.
Yeah, that's all the best gardens get silver from what I know.
100%, mate.
What did circle work get anything?
Nah, circle work had one of the water features got a leaf or a stick or something stuck in it. That started spurting water out over the whole thing. So I don't even know if the judges made it too far inside. It would have got soaking wet. That was annoying.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, water features at the garden show, eh?
Mate. Yeah. Well, proceed at your own risk with that sort of stuff. Yeah.
And when did the design come into it? Like, when did you start doing that? Was that early on?
Design was, I think, 2016. Yeah. So before that, I was just drawing, you know, I was just drawing what something I could give to the client so they could approve the job or not. Like, I drew the 2013 garden show, drew the 2015 garden show. But yeah, so then I saw Ian 2015, and probably by 2016 or late 2015, after chatting with Ian for a bit, that's when we got more serious about the design. Yeah.
And were you doing that and construction yourself?
Yes. Yeah, I was. So when you say design, like, it's such that term is so, I guess, broad or loose. Like, in 2013, I designed that garden, but is that really what is a design at the end of the day? So I was using a lot of 3D. That's where I think I had a bit of an advantage, because I was using SketchUp and doing 3D designs from just after the first garden show. So 2013, I'd given away all the, I only really hand drew a few pages of that sketchbook, and then it was all just 3D. And at that time, so what's that, 11 years ago, 3D wasn't, at least to my knowledge, wasn't really the thing. All those, you know, the bigger businesses, the successful people had been doing hand drawing their whole lives, build a career off it, build a reputation off it. And while they changed, whereas for me, I was brand new, there's this 3D technology available, and I sort of grew up with that. So I felt that, especially for the first few years, and to your question, you know, when did sort of design start? By 2015, 2016, I was already, you know, good at SketchUp. I've been using it for a few years, and I could really pump out detailed 3D designs quickly, and I could give the client options, and I could make changes on the spot, and all that really worked in my favor. So, yeah, I guess that's when design was sort of proper from probably late 2015.
Mm. Is that just self-taught with it?
Yeah, it was self-taught, but I had time. Like, from 2013 to 2016, that's 3 years of still getting some clients in the door and trying to design each time. You know, 3 years of playing around with SketchUp was enough to be sort of at some sort of a level. Obviously, much better, you know, and then you keep learning and learning and learning. So, yeah, it was all self-taught, but, yeah, I had plenty of time to learn the lessons about it.
And were there certain designers you were, like, working for in that time as well, like, trying to get work from?
No. I think I got one from Lisa Ellis back in the day. I think that might have been it from memory. I hope I'm not missing any. But, no, it was never really the goal. I never sought it out. Don't ask me why. I think I have no idea why. I just enjoyed, well, probably because I enjoyed designing, I enjoyed creating. I knew what I could build, and I knew what I could sort of see in my mind, and now I had this tool where I could present that to clients. So it was successful in my view, because clients really enjoyed the presentation. So they really liked the designs. They all got built more or less. I remember one of the first ones I did, it was in Cremorne, and it was a courtyard. And it was one of the first and only times that I drew a design without putting a construction price with it. And we went through a few changes, and they loved it. Everything was great. And then I quoted it. And they were like, whoa, that's not going to happen. And I just remember feeling so bad. Like, I just, I mean, what have I done? I wasted your time. I mean, they did end up building it slowly over time by themselves, but I still felt so bad. I was like, well, what service have I just provided? Nothing. Really nothing. I've given you some sort of direction. Shouldn't have charged. I mean, it was probably only, you know, $1,500 or something. Who knows? But I just felt so bad. So from then, I was like, no, I'm not drawing anything without a price tag next to it. So they're not just approving what it looks like. They're approving what it costs. Yeah.
Yeah, it's make, like, yeah, because all you're doing is just giving them a dream, not something that can be achieved. And so it's like they could set it up themselves.
In here now, we our designers, we have a really big emphasis on knowing how to build what you're drawing and also to quote it. So our designers will quote and do working drawings, and they're not, they don't come from building backgrounds, but our structure, you know, being design and construction, it's like, hey, look, I'm right here, I'm across the desk from you, you've got a bunch of landscapers on call, like, just ask any of us, we'll sort of confirm. So it's really good to try and, it's really good for the growth of the designers. I mean, you know what it's like, you've got it, you get working drawings through, and sometimes, like, we still get them sent through. People send through, oh, this is design, can you build it? And a lot of the time you just go, there's no way I can build it. One, because it's illegal. Two, you know, it might be there's just no detail, or, I mean, you know what it's like. So we're big on, hey, guys, don't give us, as, you know, for the construction part of our business, we say to the designers, don't give us something we can't build. You got to know, you know, you stand behind that design and we got to be able to build it. So that probably comes from, yeah, that early design where it felt bad for delivering something because everyone's on a high, and then the quote comes in and everyone's on a low. I'm just like, oh, no.
Yep. And, like, with the designs as well, in terms of how much detail you have in there, sometimes it can be too much because, like, I'll get a set of plans and it tells us how to do something, like, with construction drawings.
Mm.
I'm not doing it like that. That's, like, if I've got to back it up. Like, if something goes wrong with it, the client's not going to ring up the designer saying, you know, there's cracks in this or whatever. They'll ring me up. So I can't build something that someone else has recommended when they've got no idea. Like, they don't have their building license, even though they're given these construction drawings.
And I'm sure you would be able to pinpoint the difference. You'd put two plans next to each other, and I know you know who, if someone's registered or building background, you'd be like, yeah, that one I could build how they said. And that one, I might give them a call, say, how about we do this a different way? Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's important. And, we try and go down that path.
And because of what we do, some of it is best just you need to sort of work it out on site. Like, you can't plan every single element within a landscape, especially when there's different heights.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but it's communication with the client. So if you know that there's an area you're unsure about, even through design, hey, look, that's all overgrown, you've got retaining walls and all, we can't even see, we can't get survey in there, so that's an area where, you know, TBC or whatever. And again, with our model being design and construction, if we design and don't build, like, it's a disaster for us, disaster for the client. So it's in everyone's best interests to say, hey, look, we'll just be honest with you. That part we don't know. Everything else, all good. Or by the time we get out of the ground and we set our own levels, after that, all good. But beforehand, we don't know if we're going to hit rock in excavation or, you know, a pipe full of roots. We don't know. So we try and be clear with what's a variable, and which is not many. We try and really make that skinny so it's easier for the client.
Mm. Yeah. And are you still, you're only building your own designs pretty much now?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we built one of Nathan Burkett's maybe 2 years ago. And that's about it. Yeah, we still get them sent through. So we can, you know, sometimes it's just interesting to see. So you see, like, a wide variety, as you would, a wide variety of, you know, quality in the design, you know, detail in the working drawings and ideas. You know, some crazy ideas or boring ideas, you just see the whole lot. Mm. But we tend to not build them. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And what's your team at the moment in terms of designers and landscaping crews?
We've got three in the office, plus Karen in admin, and we've got, two teams in Melbourne, one in Geelong in terms of full-timers. So we've got 17 in total. I've got two in maintenance, but we try and run, we've always been sort of between, I say always, recently we've been between sort of 15 and 20. We really went a bit more skinny on apprentices and a bit more heavy on qualified guys. So in Geelong, we've got a team of four qualifieds on site. Gosh. Yeah, yeah. Which sounds like a lot, do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. But it works really well in the sense that when there's no apprentices on site, you get really good sort of accountability for the amount of work that's getting done. There's no, oh, well, you know, the apprentice slowed me down that day or whatever. And you also get, we just got feedback from the guys. It's like, oh, we used to run a qualified with two apprentices and it felt like there was a fair bit of pressure on the qualified to get their own work done, teach the young guys, manage the sick days, whatever else was going on. So we sort of changed it to go, oh, well, let's go two qualifieds with one apprentice. That was much better for support for the qualified guys. And then we even went to two qualifieds, two apprentices per team, because we think that, I don't know what you reckon, but for us, it seemed like a team of one was the most efficient, but too slow, too boring. So a team of two was next best, but even then on a bigger job, too slow. So then we went, all right, well, as long as you guys stay separate on site, we can, for the most part, have a team of two and a team of two, but you both on the same site, then we'll work it that way. But it's always, I mean, I don't know about you, but it's ever changing. You know, you're learning and growing the whole time.
Yeah, like every job's different. So it might work amazingly on one job, but then not on the next. And it's nothing to do with the people. It's just the type of work that you've got to do because there's so much you do within landscape.
Exactly right. Yeah.
So so you started out in Melbourne and then you've opened up a Geelong arm of the business as well. Where'd that idea come from?
Geelong was as a result of one of our qualified guys who'd been with us his whole apprenticeship. Great guy, wanted to move down to Torquay. We still wanted to keep him. He still wanted to work. So we tried to build something around Jed. The key part, the key detail is that he told me with a year notice. So we had a year to figure out, can we do it? Is this what we want to do? If he had told me like last minute, we couldn't do it. So I was always really grateful. And for him, it's a risk. Because he doesn't know if I'm going to throw the toys out of the cot. Who knows how I'll react? Oh, you know, you're a fool. Don't want to have anything to do with you. Who knows like what I'm going to say? So I understand from an employee's perspective, I respect the, you know, the risk that he took and the confidence he had in me to be able to share that. But the result was, mate, no dramas. I've got a year to try and set something up, start some marketing, whatever we've got to do, and then build something up around you. So that was great. The start wasn't great. It was still so hard, even with a year's notice. Oh, mate, we're building like boundary paling fences at a loss, you know, for a while. This is after a year's worth of, you know, notice. And, oh, mate, it was really hard. But, yeah, I guess it probably took another year. Well, that was part of why we did 2019 Garden Show, to try and let everyone know, hey, we can actually build cool things and we've got local staff in Geelong. Let's do it. So, yeah, it took a while, but, yeah, it was based around that move with that qualified guy to the coast.
And how is it now? Like, now you're kind of as good as a local now?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, that's the thing. In the early, when we first went there, I thought that we could just take the Melbourne, you know, business that we've got and show everyone in Geelong and no dramas, off to the races. But what I didn't account for is it's very localized sort of feel. At least that was my experience. So when we got to, you know, at that time, what year was that? Whatever it was, I think it was about 6 years ago. And at that time, you've got huge influx of people from Melbourne moving down the coast. So the roads are way busier. You've got more people trying to surf the good breaks and dropping in on people in the water. And I just didn't really feel like we were that welcome at the time. I thought, nah, Melbourne people, we don't want you. Go away. That was my perception. I'm sure it wasn't everybody, but that's sort of what we experienced. So as soon as you go to someone's house and go, oh, yeah, Melbourne, Melbourne, Melbourne. They just go, catch you later. Don't want to know you. And don't say you go for anyone other than Geelong Football Club too. That also get you fast track out the front door. So it's really hard for a while until we – but I was like, we've got local staff. Like the guys building your gardens live in Anglesey, Torquay, Ocean Grove, Highton. Like, you know, we're local. What does it matter where I live? So it took a little while to get through that.
Yep. Yep. But, yeah, like it is basically a small town. Like everyone knows each other. Like not everyone, but you do see – it's pretty common to see someone, you know, just in a random spot. So it does feel like that. But like I say, the amount of people down from Melbourne now, it's mind-boggling. Like we used to do work in Melbourne to work on amazing projects, but now they're all – there's enough for everyone down here.
100%. Heaps. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, I've followed you on Instagram for a while and I saw Woodella Landscapes and then Woodella Landscapes Geelong. And then I saw a recommended account to follow was Woodella Landscapes Byron Bay. So what's this?
Are you my first follower?
It was one of them, yeah. Because I think you didn't, no one was supposed to know about it. And I started following you already.
Yeah, that's right. I remember I texted you, how'd you know about this, mate? Yeah. That was funny. Byron was different again. So, again, if you go back a few years, we had a plan to post Geelong. We always sort of had a plan to either go to, sound crazy, but we're either going to go to the Hamptons in New York or Byron Bay. Yeah, I know. So it was written in one of our earlier plans from previous years that that's where we're going to do one of those two. It's not as random as it sounds. My brother lived in New York for 10, 11 years, so I'd spend a bit of time there visiting him. And I mean, it's because starting now, I sort of talk about it. It sounds like a bit of a theme, you know, for probably a lot of my career that I was just trying to, I felt we had a really good product. I knew that 3Ds weren't that common at the time. And I wanted to see, I felt like our product was really good and we could help a lot of people. Like we could just service people. Clients were really happy. We were just having good feedback. And as I said earlier, like the more sort of good feedback that I got, obviously, you know, not all great feedback and mistakes and all the rest of it, but by and large, the feedback was good. So then I'm in New York and I go to the Hamptons and, you know, I'm pitching for this project through my brother's friend and a contact and whatever else. And they're like, oh, what are you doing here? Oh, so I go down to the Hamptons and just try and sit and get some work basically and whatever. And they're like, oh yeah, my friend's building in the Hamptons. I'm like, sweet, book us up. So I go down there. We didn't get that job, but oh, mate, have you been there?
Nah.
It's insane. I remember going there and, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, having a look around. And I thought at the time, you know, who are the wealthiest people that I can think of? I'm thinking like A-list Hollywood actors, but these, not in the Hamptons. It was just on such another level. I couldn't, huge acreages, huge, like 4 MCGs size and just moan like the MCG. And then the house is way over in the distance, this huge like, and white, you know, post and rail fences around the whole property and cherry blossoms in full bloom right along the nature strip. The place, it's just unbelievable and they're everywhere. So I'm just driving around looking at, oh, my mind was just obviously blown. So I just start going around knocking on doors. Who needs landscaping? Yeah, I'm like, well, you know, the same sort of thing as, you know, Geelong or anything, even Melbourne at the start. It's like, how can I show people that I'm here? And, you know, the standard problem that every new business has is how do I let people know I'm here? So I'm like, well, I might as well knock on the door, see if anyone's home. Knocked on a bunch of doors, didn't get any jobs, but just to look around. And I went to, so that one where my friend's friend was building, there was a road that runs along the beach down there and he had a house on each side of the road, one on like the sort of lagoon marshes side and one on the beach side. Standing up on this guy's rooftop and the builder's there with the client, the one that he'd already built. And it was one of those, like you're talking the, you know, the boardwalk that goes across the dunes to the beach. And then on the other side of the road, his other house, the boardwalk goes through the marshes to, I don't know, boats or something like that over there. The place was just incredible. And he's talking about spending $4 or $5 million on the rooftop. And I actually caught it on video because I was just filming the view. And in the background, I caught this conversation. He's like, yeah, $5 million on the rooftop. Yeah, yeah, it's worth it. It's worth it. And I'm just like, this is just insane. And I'm trying to quote this job across the road and I don't know where to start. I'm like, who knows what you're supposed to charge, what their expectation is. Anyway, long story short, it was just a fascinating sort of time. We ended up getting a job in East Village, New York, just a design job there. Another one in Georgia. And then by then it was late 2019 and then COVID happened. And that's when we redirected to Byron. Yeah. I'm not saying we got any traction in the US at all, but yeah, we're just sort of trying to make it work. And then obviously couldn't go there anymore. So we diverted to the north.
I think Byron does seem a bit more achievable if you're trying to run the Melbourne and Geelong one as well.
100%. Yeah.
Shorter plane, right?
Yeah, it's funny. Like when you look back, you don't really know. I don't know about you, but in terms of like the end goal or, you know, the finish line, to me, it was never, I didn't really know where that was. So it was just like, well, let's try this path and see where it goes. So, yeah, in terms of, you know, the Hamptons, what's the end goal there? Like, how's that going to work? Easy to say now, but a bit of an experience.
Yeah. You become friendly with a client, they leave the house to you in your will, and you're set.
All of that, mate. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
So how did you get the first jobs in Byron Bay?
Well, it was kind of similar to Geelong in the fact that it was really hard. So we thought, well, why are we going to go to Byron? And really it was at that time with COVID and, you know, staff was so hard to find. So we're like, well, for one thing, we can offer it to our staff for winter, get out of 8 degrees in Melbourne and you can come to a couple of weeks or a couple of months if you want up in Byron. So that was one of the main, I'd say, three things. So there was, you know, bonus for the staff. It was, you know, we'd spent so much time and money trying to get Geelong right. Is that replicable in a different state? And thirdly, future-proofing. So we learned through, especially through COVID, that we had design, we had Melbourne construction and Geelong construction. So any one time we could have someone working, whether it was regional construction or design, whatever it was, we always had something. And we thought, well, to extrapolate that out a little bit, if we're in a different state and you have, you know, state economic issues or the war or anything like that, it might just help to have, you know, spread out a little bit. So that was pretty much the three reasons. But yeah, it didn't make it any easier to find work and get going.
Mm. Yeah, just one of those things that takes time again to build your name with the locals.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever had a business coach throughout the journey?
No, I haven't. Probably, like I told you, Ian Barker was instrumental in giving me direction. Marty Semkin, sat down with him once as well. Yeah, and that's been about it. Yeah.
You've got some, you seem good at goal setting and sort of having a vision of the next step.
Yeah, thanks. I think that you end up being, for me, you sort of end up almost backed into a corner in one way where you have to have a vision and a goal because now you've got sort of mouths to feed. Similar to that garden show example, the difference from 2013 to 2019, like you might, 2013, it's just all on me and I win or I fail or I win or lose and we move on. But by the time you've got, you know, you've got to pay for the office, you've got to pay for your staff, you've got car loans, you've got the excavator, you've got the marketing bill, you've got the account, like all that stuff. It's like, well, now I really have to think about the direction, where we're going to be in a few years and how that's all going to work or else I just wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I didn't have some sort of thought in mind what we're going to do.
Yeah, it keeps it interesting as well.
100%. Oh, I love it. Yeah, I think you have to. Yeah, I'm sure you'd be a testament to this. You got to love it.
Yeah. Mm. And I asked you a while ago to come on the podcast and you said you wanted to wait until you finished an app that you were developing. So now that you're on here, it must mean that that's finished. So.
Oh, mate. Oh, I wish. Yeah, so we tried to. That must have been about 5 years. Yeah, I've been trying to build that app for 5 years. It's a safety app. And It's called, I shouldn't say what it's called, because then people might download it and then give me a bad review. But it's called Swims JSA. So it's a platform for your swims and a platform for your job safety analysis in JSA. It works really well within our company. We use it on site. I remember it started when, and I know a lot of people are in this boat, you're trying to really tighten up your safety stuff. So you end up printing out these swims and JSAs, and you're going around to the sites and you got your pen there and you're trying to get the guys to fill them all out. And then who knows where the papers end up, and then the pen breaks, and then it's just a nightmare. It's so inconvenient to do that part of the compliance, the safety compliance. So I was like, oh, there must be an app for this. Couldn't find one. I was like, great, well, I'll just make one. Wow, if I could take myself back to that day and stop myself. Oh, it's so hard. So I'm getting a few quotes around, I guess, Australia or Melbourne. Can you build me this app? And they're, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, which I don't have. So I look offshore. And a guy, I think he was in India or something, builds this app for me. And it works pretty well. It's very, like, it's supposed to be user-friendly and simple. Oh, sorry, to circle back, like, there are apps that you can have swims and JSAs on, but they're really big. And for big, you know, huge companies and there's huge functionality, they're expensive. I was like, look, I'm a guy, we've got a couple of staff. We just want to be, you know, safety compliant. I just want something simple and cheap. So the functionality is really good. You've got induction, and you can choose your own questions, get everyone to tick them off. And you've got a swim section, a JSA section. It's really user-friendly, and it worked great for us. Had it built offshore, as I said. But after, I didn't know that you had to maintain these apps. I thought you just build it, and it's a product, and you've got it, and that's it. So, you know, hand up, naive, didn't know anything about it. And so before long, the thing, you know, shut down, doesn't work anymore. The problem was I didn't take it off the App Store. And I think it cost maybe $1 to download, or I think it was $2 maybe. And then so people download it, and it was just like a bug at the start. You couldn't actually log in. So I'm getting all these reviews. Yeah, this is terrible. This is the biggest waste of money. I'm like, oh, well, it's $2. But sure, it didn't work. And then I'm back and forth. I'm from Australia to offshore trying to get this thing fixed, and went through a whole bunch of developers. And again, hand up, you know, common denominator is me. So, you know, for me to go through all those developers, I'm not wholly and blameless in that, but it's so frustrating. I can't get the thing to work. I don't understand the technical part. I started trying to do a course in app building, and I didn't have time for that. And the long story short, the thing works really well for us, but it's not really a commercial product. You can download it if you want. The problem now is it all works, except when you try and add new employees, the email for them to click on the link goes to the junk. It takes about half an hour to get there. If you try and add someone the next day, you'll have to resubscribe to the app. Your subscription's still live, but it doesn't recognize it. You don't have to pay again. You've just got to click your subscription on that screen. So again, fine for me to navigate, but I can't say, hey, Joel, use this. You'd be like, oh, am I paying? I'll be getting phone calls everywhere. So no, it's a nightmare, mate. Oh, anyone tech out there listening, like, give me a call.
And is it something you're going to keep working on because you want to get it good to go?
Oh, yeah, it is, mate. Yeah. I'm still going. I had a meeting with the guy yesterday, because it takes me a while to recover from the frustration before I go, all right, let's have another meeting and try and sort this out. And he actually said, oh, it's working fine, but you're on like the test version. Anyone else, it'll work fine. I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to be on the test version. Put me on the real version so I can see that it works properly, and then I can tell everyone it works properly. At the moment, I'm on the test version that doesn't work, or that I've got to it's frustrating, but I'll probably keep going with it. Yeah. I need a tech business partner.
Yeah. But yeah, you're so far into it, you can't just leave it now.
It feels that way. And we still use it. So, you know, I don't know.
But yeah, like it's rare that I hear a good story about people who develop their own apps.
I was having dinner with a guy the other night, friend of a friend, and he just launched an app. And he's been in tech his whole life. And he goes, Rob, mate, I've just launched this app and there are bugs in it that I don't know how to fix. I'm like, you've been in tech your whole life. What chance have I got?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
with you having business in Melbourne and Geelong, have you got machines that sort of go between the two, or do you have some based down in Geelong?
We've got one machine and it just travels from job to job. So normally it's on a job for maybe a week at the start or so, maybe a week at the end, depending on what the job is. If someone else is using it, we need another one, we'll just hire one for the day or something until ours is available. Yeah.
And what is it that you got?
1.7 ton Yanmar. Yeah, it's great. It's awesome.
Yeah, nice. Yep. Now, I've just hired one for next week, actually, and I've got, and they said I could, they've got a battery, 1.7 ton. I don't know what, if it's probably
wow.
Close to you.
But really?
They want to get some hours on it, so I'm going to give that a try.
My head was that?
And luckily, I'm only digging holes for plants just with the bucket, so I'm not doing anything too crazy. So, yeah.
How big's the battery?
I don't know anything about it, but it's a 1.7 ton.
So. Yeah.
That might be what the counterweight is at the back. It's the battery.
Yeah. It doesn't have a blade. It's got a battery.
So what's coming up next for the business? Have you got plans, like you're wanting to increase, like be more permanent in Byron Bay, or what's the goals?
Yeah, more permanent in Byron Bay. So at the moment it's just the guys are coming up from Melbourne, or we've got a couple of guys in the north that are not permanent. They're not full-time, so we can sort of use them. So if and when we need, if we're organised enough. So the plan is just to grow. I mean, the growth, I mean, I think we started there maybe, I mean, when did you message me? I should check on Instagram. Probably about 2 years ago or so, maybe a bit more. So it still takes like a long time to get a bit of a footprint. But now, you know, that is a lot of the hard work done. We've got good traction now. So that'll sort of grow, we assume, the same way that Geelong did. So that's exciting. Some great projects up there at the moment. And franchising is the other thing. If you want to talk about that? Yeah, that's sort of where we're going next. Franchising, we've just been through. So we created a franchise system for the last sort of 12 months. And it's more or less done now, just getting the last bits of legal ticked off. But that's been a really, I don't know if it's been an eye-opening process. Very interesting, because you've got to look at your business in a different light. And that light is, I mean, I can go through some of the details, but essentially, can this business function where you've got the franchisee making money and being successful? You've got to have the client happy, you've got to have the accountant happy, and the franchisor happy as well, which is me. So can you tick all of those boxes? And it takes a while to, like, you can answer yes, you can tick that box, but you've got to tick that box in 200 different ways. So you go through accounting for months, you go through operations for months, you go through legal for not as long, but still a couple of months, and it's checks the whole way. Does the model stack up? Is it still ticking those boxes? So to look at the business from that lens has been fascinating, and we're doing it. We've got a lot of ticks in the boxes, and it looks like it seems to work. So happy about that.
That's pretty exciting. Are there any, like, there's Jim's Landscaping, but that's more about the Jim's group. So, but there's not really any other landscaping franchises I could think of.
Not that I know of. And that was one of the, not, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? It's good because you go into that market without competition in the same space, but also you don't have other businesses to compare to or to, you know, replicate or whatever. So we had to start everything from scratch, and it was just a bit of uncertainty, like, you know, I've got to take that leap, because it got, you know, obviously you're paying for all those consultants and everything along the way, and it's obviously not cheap at all. So it's like, well, are we going to do this? It's a risk. So to not have a blueprint that someone else has done, I mean, we sort of started everything from scratch. But again, back to what appears to be my theme, it's if you can get that positive feedback and you can, you know, achieve those sort of milestones or benchmarks along the way, then you keep going. So that's pretty much what we did. It's a really, really good model. It ends up with, like, it's so hard creating, it's hard to build a business. I mean, I think everyone knows that or says they know that. But until you've done it yourself, like, how many mistakes do you make? How long does it take to make money? Or how long does it take to realize you're not making money when you think you are? and then how long does it take to actually make money after that? So if you buy into an existing brand, you know, you can save years of time, and at least with our model, like, you're still going through design. If you might be a gun landscaper, but if you don't have any idea how to run a business, you got no idea about design, you might have no idea about marketing, finance, there's all these things you don't know. And our franchise model is about bridging those gaps and saying, all right, well, let's hone in on your strengths. You can actually build your own business, but we'll be here sort of in the background filling the gaps for you, there for support. So when that client's been a nightmare to you and you got no one to call, we can call us. You know, we're there with you. We're sort of like a silent partner, if you like. Yeah.
And have you got systems and processes that you do now that you'll sort of, they'll get access to that as well?
100%. Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of the big things. Like, we'll still go through our normal pathway, more or less, but the franchisee will own the business. So we don't anticipate that a franchisee will straight away be able to, you know, close a sale, do all the design themselves, convert that design into construction, be registered and sign the contract, and then go and deliver on the build. You'll have some of those skills, but probably not all of them, and, as you know, a myriad of others that you need to tick off. So we can help with, and we want those franchisees or potential franchisees to be really adept at all of that, that whole pathway. So we want them to be registered. We can help them. We want them to be able to do their own designs. And, you know, this is not all overnight, obviously. But we'll bridge the gap until you've learned. It might be 5 years, who knows? But we're there for you. So you can still operate a really enjoyable business where you can make good money, service these clients well. And in the meantime, you can learn some design. You can get your builder's license. You can learn sales. You can have your CRM already set up. You can have your site signs already done, your logos ready, all of those back end things, so you can sort of start, you know, you can be kickstarted instead of trying to find someone to build a retaining wall down their driveway.
Yeah. And you're going to have, like, will it be like Woodell Landscapes Adelaide kind of thing? Is that what they'll be? Like, certain?
They're smaller territories, so it's not like state by state. We've created the territories based on, well, that's the other benefit that we had. We had 3 years of really, really good. No, that's not true. That's a different topic. That's about bonuses. We had, since we've been in Geelong, and even before that, we've got so much data that we can use and say, well, we know how many leads we can produce in Ocean Grove or Central Geelong or, you know, Werribee area. We know what the average job value is. We know how many leads have to come in before you're actually, I mean, what you're going to convert. We've got all that data. So then you can actually split your region up and go, well, we're not going to do the whole of Bayside with all of your Brightons and your Beaumaris and your Sandringham. One, because that territory would be so expensive that probably no one's going to buy it. But also you won't be able to handle that much work, you know, starting off. So we have to be a bit strategic about where the territories are, make it realistic for someone to buy and operate in. So yeah, it's not really state by state. It's a bit more, we've sort of worked it out.
Yeah. You did mention bonuses there before. So what do you do to keep your employees
happy?
Yeah, one foot in front of the other and efficient.
Can I say that? Happy? Is that a thing?
Hopefully.
Now they've got all our staff are amazing, and we try to keep them happy, really. So we've got things like, I mean, every second month we'll do some sort of a team bonding exercise, whether it's holy moly golf, lawn bowls, time zone, laser tag, escape rooms, all that sort of stuff. So we do those every second month, try and get everyone together. That's the other thing, like the Melbourne guys don't always see the Geelong guys and the maintenance guys and the designers and all that. So try and get everyone together. But also, and things like Byron, like trying to create some opportunities where you might be able to just improve someone's, you know, lifestyle or work environment. Also, like the support that I mentioned before, getting more qualified guys on site to try and help just that day-to-day. But yeah, the bonuses was interesting. Yeah, that's what I was talking about before. So we originally thought of it, I think that maybe trade in general, but definitely landscape has can really learn a lot from other, so many other industries. I think real estate sets a really high example in terms of their marketing is always really good. You know, I won't go all the way into it, but they've just got a lot of professionalism about that industry, or so it seems. And also like corporate. I looked around, I'm like, there's so many corporate industries and my friends working in them or whatever else, and there's all these bonus structures. I'm sort of asking around landscaping. I'm like, oh, you know, what do people think? And no one really got on board in terms of anyone else that I asked, like, oh, no, probably that's a risky path. So I didn't, but I kept really good data over a three-year period and imagined that I had a bonus system in, like a profit share with the guys on site. And over that three-year period, the data was telling me that it has to work. It must work. 3 years, that would have worked. So I just made the call one day. It was a bit of a break or breakthrough, I think, for me, because I was getting a bit sick of everything. That can happen sometimes. But, you know, you'd go to site and there's cement bags that have been left out in the rain. They're all ruined. Every Monday, everyone's sick. Every second Friday, everyone's sick. And I'm just like, oh, my goodness, it's still my head in. So I was like, all right, might be a bit of a risk, but I reckon it's going to work. And if it doesn't work and it all falls flat and I go bust, fine. I'd rather that than keep banging my head against the wall. And if it does work, then everyone is better off. So when you think about a profit share on a job, that's basically what we do. We've got our, you know, we've got a set level and we're transparent with all the numbers. And then anything above where our set level is, we'll split amongst the guys. So it means that all of a sudden people care about the GP bags that are now wet in the rain. And now you're accountable. Oh, okay. So you've had the last few Mondays off because you were sick, and that's still a cost to the business. So that's going in the job summary, and that's just cost your workmates some of their bonus because you got drunk on a Sunday night, even though you don't want to tell me. Doesn't happen anymore, I have to say. The guys were all great. I did say that. All our staff are magnificent. But, yeah, there have been times prior I was like, I've got to stop this somehow. They've got to have, you know, you could be killing it on site and smash this job and it's super efficient. All your deliveries were on time. You maximize your work day and the job went well. So here's your bonus. We profited well. Here's your bonus. Or if you didn't make bonus, well, what happened? Like, it's set up so you can make bonus. We know our targets. We know our thresholds. We're all in-house. We design, quote, build in-house. We know what it's all going to be, what it should be. We know what your capabilities are. We know all of that stuff. So if you haven't met that mark, what happened? Obviously, nobody's perfect and all of that, so you can still, but they're learnings. If it's not happening, well, as a supplier change their prices, we're not aware of. It's not always about have the guys done the right thing on site. There's a lot of factors, but it just keeps everyone honest in the office, out of the office, the whole works. So, yeah, that's worked well.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd be too worried that because my guys could do two jobs exactly the same, and one of them, like, it basically depends how I quote it. If I don't quote it properly, it doesn't matter how well they work. They're not going to make a profit. So that's what stopped me from doing something like that.
Yeah, and that great call, and you're exactly right. And that happened first. So the first year after we brought bonuses in didn't go very well. But what it did was highlight exactly what you said. Have we quoted it wrong? Have we got prices wrong? So then when we fixed it, the next year was really good. Last year we paid out over 50 grand in bonuses, and this year will be more. But that first year was, yeah, not so good, but at least, like, if you've quoted it wrong, you'll have your own systems and stuff to figure that out. But we didn't at the time. So, like, well, we could be quoting it wrong and we don't even know. How are we going to know? Well, if the guys are all a bit annoyed that they worked hard, didn't get the bonus, they're going, well, what happened? Well, I'm sort of forced to look into it and I find out, oh, gee, we got this wrong. Yeah. So, yeah, it's still a working, it's always a work in progress, but it's been really good.
No, that's awesome. Well, thoroughly enjoyed having this chat because I love how your brain works. That's fascinating to see how, you're not just going doing your common garden variety landscaping. You're always thinking of these different opportunities as well. So it's fascinating to talk to. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, Joel. Thanks for having me. That was fun. I'll let you know when the app's working. We'll do it again.
Yeah, do that and look forward to that in 3 years.
Yeah, I know, or more. Yeah.
Well, I know I forgot to ask who you recommend as a guest to have on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. What about like Nathan Burkett or Jack Merlo?
Yep. A couple of big names.
Something like that. Yeah. Also, if you get a chance to put that song back at the start of the podcast, the intro song,
I'll do it for this episode.
Oh, thanks, mate. That's awesome.
Thank you, Rob.
Good on you, Joel. Thank you, mate. Appreciate it.